Hi and welcome to the Insight podcast from CDC Group, soon to be known as British International Investment. In this podcast series, we share some of the highlights from one of our recent Insight events. These events aim to share practical lessons on private sector investment and development based on our experiences, knowledge and research. So today, joining us is Frank Aswani. Frank is the CEO of the African Venture Philanthropy Alliance, and in this episode, we discuss what exactly venture philanthropy is, its role and the role of impact-led investment in addressing the challenges facing the African continent, and we talk about bridging the gap needed to fund the Sustainable Development Goals by 2030. So without any further ado, here's Frank Aswani in conversation with your host and our General Counsel, Colin Buckley.
Now, the landscape of funding for development is considerably more complex today than it was 10 years ago. Over the past year, through these Insight events, we've looked at a variety of financial instruments and innovations. We've looked at blended finance, impact investing, guarantees, social finance. Today, we're going to consider the place of venture philanthropy and how that fits in the landscape. Venture philanthropy is actually a term that we heard a lot of maybe some 10 years ago, but has fallen a little in disfavor. So we're going to look at what that used to mean and how it's evolved over the time. We're joined by Dr. Frank Aswani, CEO of the African Venture Philanthropy Association, or AFPA. Frank began his career at Eli Lilly, where he rose to be sales director for South Africa and director for Sub-Saharan Africa. And he's complemented that commercial background with senior roles at the Africa Leadership Academy and at ARC, an international children's charity. So welcome, Frank. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Colin, and thank you to the audience. It's a real pleasure to be here.
So let's start out. I mean, what is this venture philanthropy? It's been a long time since we've heard about this. And tell us about AFPA and what you've been doing for the last 10 years.
Colin, I was kind of hoping you didn't ask me what venture philanthropy is, but nonetheless, when people talk about venture philanthropy, it's seen as a high engaging, long-term approach towards impact, where philanthropists will tend to support a social purpose organization in the long haul, usually deploying philanthropy, but also non-financial support so that they can maximize impact. Not so much financial return, but maximize impact. As AVPA, our focus on venture philanthropy has totally shifted because the world is demanding different solutions. So we work right across the continuum of capital, working with deployers of grants, debt, and equity towards impact, helping them not just to mobilize capital, but also to deploy it for maximum impact. We are in a situation whereby, as you know, we have more problems than we have resources to solve the issues that we're facing. And it's demanding innovation in how we approach and mobilize capital and also deploy the capital. So what AVPA does, it aims to fundamentally, the problem we're trying to solve is how do we close the social financing gap in Africa? So what AVPA does is to try and think creatively about how we could mobilize capital and fundamentally look at how the private sector can play an increasingly leading role in funding social investments. So we do that by bringing investors together, connecting them to each other. We have a deal share platform in which we connect investors to each other, but also deal with this issue of many investors saying that there's more capital in Africa than investable opportunities.
So let me ask you a question about this deal platform, because what we've heard in other events, and this may be from the top down, but we often hear this statement that the problem in Africa is not capital. The problem is that there are not enough deals. But you've got a unique way of looking at this problem, really from the bottom up. So do you take issue with that generally accepted belief?
There is some truth to it, for sure. And partially, it comes from a state of unconscious incompetence. People don't know they don't know. Many of our people who are supporting SMEs are not connected to the following investors to understand what exactly do I need to be doing with my SME today to get them ready to be able to connect to the following investor. So we've got a lot of really entrepreneurial people on the continent, but I think that state of not knowing what it takes to attract foreign capital is hindering us from attracting more capital in this space. And that's why we do the DealShare platform. But there's also some education that needs to happen on the investor side to understand what's unique about the African entrepreneur. When you're coming in to invest in an African entrepreneur, what are the things you need to think about, the challenges they face, the risks they're having to manage, the kind of environment in which they are playing in. So I think it demands a bit of compromise from both sides, but also education from both sides.
Yeah. I mean, AFPA has been on a great journey over the last, 10 years. But I'm wondering if you could, what do you think we could do differently going forward to bridge that gap? Because what you're suggesting is, people don't know the deals that are actually there, and the deals that are there can't get the attention of the investors in London and Berlin and so forth. Any ideas about ways that we can bridge that? I mean, you spoke about education, but are there things that we can do with capital or with finance?
Absolutely correct. There's definitely a lot we can do with capital finance. I think we can restructure capital and finance differently. So let me give you a case in point. If you look at the opportunity behind gender lens investing in Africa, it's a $360 billion opportunity. Gender lens investing is no longer a nice to do. There's actually a really good business case behind it. But today, as an African woman, if you went to borrow money from a bank, it will demand you to bring collateral, like a title deed for land or whatever. And in many countries, women are not allowed to own land. So how can we kind of really package that energy that women bring? Because Africa has much more, a higher percentage of women entrepreneurs than you have male entrepreneurs. How do we generalize, take that energy that women bring and help them propel them to greatness? And I think financial institutions, for example, need to think differently about how they assess the credit worthiness of a woman, a business person. And there's a lot of innovation coming through in that space. Now people are looking at psychometric tests, for example. People are looking at revenue-based models. So there's definitely a space for capital deployers to think differently about how they deploy capital for impact.
Before we leave this point, maybe we can kind of draw back and take a very big view here. I mean, often we think about how finance can translate into economic development for Africa. And we've had people come on these events and hypothesize different routes to economic growth, investing in infrastructure, investing in financial institutions. I wonder whether, I mean, you've got a unique look on this. What do you think is the role of finance for, African economic growth?
The role of finance for me is to see how it can create sustainable economic growth and what are the models that it needs to follow. Okay, we need to stop thinking about dealing with the symptom of the problem and try to start addressing the root causes of some of the economic challenges we face. So, for example, you look at the case in point around the whole challenge now where we're trying to look at impact investing in Africa. And Africa, for me, is the impact sandbox of the world. There's no better place for an impact investor to be than in Africa. If you're not in Africa as an impact investor, you're not playing. This is like, it's like trying to play a Champions League game on a Sunday football pitch. You've got to be playing at Wembley, and Africa is a Wembley of impact. and for me, when you start thinking about those things, is to ask yourself, okay, so what's holding Africa back? What's holding capital deployment in Africa back? And the best way for us to do this is to have Africans who've lived the problem to live the solution. But how do we enable them become better at living the solution? And if you look at things like capabilities, we are still very stuck in the old ways of solving our problems. Even our own, we as Africans, one of the things as AVPA we're trying to change is to say, we've got to move away from that mindset that social issues can only be solved by grants. Okay. Because we need to be thinking about sustainable financing and sustainable impact. And some of our social issues have commercial opportunity. They have commercial IP that can create more sustainable market solutions. And we should not be shy and to start challenging our own mindset. We need to start challenging mindsets, for example, like the private sector has no role to play in social investments. COVID has taught us that it's our business to keep societies healthy and vibrant. Otherwise, our own commercial customer base will be eroded. So there's a real place for us to think creatively about a new way of driving social impact that is inclusive, that is purpose-driven, that mainstreams the thinking about the involvement of both traditional philanthropic capital and private capital.
So one thing we've been investigating through these inside events is kind of novel ways that development finance institutions or other traditional development actors can, how they can change. Because what we've learned is we're in a space of rapid financial innovation, especially in Africa. So with that background, I mean, what is it that, I mean, can DFIs help in this shift? I mean, you've been talking about education, but is there something that, you know, CDC or FCDO can do to help you make that educational shift?
Absolutely. And I think DFIs underestimate the power they've got. But before I talk about DFIs, let me take a step back and just talk about grant philanthropists, for example, or aid agencies.
Yeah.
I think the grant funding of today needs to think a bit differently. It needs to be thinking, I'm coming into a space where there isn't enough money to fund the problem that we have. How do I use my money cleverly? How do I make my $1 unlock $10 of other funding? How do I magnify my impact? So I think there's a really nice and emerging role for philanthropists and grant money today to be more risk-taking, to test new products, new markets, new services. Okay, I think philanthropists should be the ones taking some of that initial high risk, funding some of your more innovative, for example, SMEs at stages when they can't attract private capital. I think there's a really interesting place where philanthropists should take a lot more risk in identifying or pushing through to proof of concepts, really interesting models and approaches and products that can then be scaled for impact. So that's the first thing. When it comes then to DFIs, absolutely. By the definition, you're development finance institutions, but sometimes you behave almost like private banks. You don't take as much risk as you should, for example. When you come to Africa, you want to do and not to enable. I think DFIs should be asking themselves, how are we not just doing, but how are we enabling?
Great answer, and certainly a challenge for us. Following up on that, though, I mean, we all know that we're looking at a huge gap in either capital or investments. It doesn't really matter to achieve the 2030 goals. And some people say it's 500 billion. Some people say it's a trillion. Let's just agree. It's an extremely large sum of money.
Yes.
And I'm always curious to ask people who come on, how do you think we're going to bridge that? I mean, how much of that gap should be made up by African investment from Africa? How much should be kind of investment from commercial investors kind of in the West, just looking at investable opportunities? How much is impact investors? How much is DFIs? I mean, how do we kind of build something up to bridge that large number? And where should we be focusing our efforts?
Colin, if I had an answer to that question, I wouldn't be here. you ask a really good question, but a really difficult question as well. I don't know, to be honest, but what I know, we should not be standing still. We should be out there experimenting and trying out new approaches because our old ones are not working. If you look back at how we've been trying to fund this space through aid and government funding, it hasn't worked. We haven't built sustainable development. In many cases, aid has left African countries worse than they've been in the 60s. Some of us have worse living standards than our parents did. The bottom line, we need to look at doing something different. What I know for sure is that we're at a stage where we're smarter, we've got more options, and we need to be looking at different possibilities. And this is where we need to try and ask ourselves, how are we testing new models of trying to solve this problem sustainably? You're right, the size is growing. Our age in Africa is 19. Compared to, I think the UK is mid to late 40s, Japan is 51. We are adding 1 million people a month into the continent, into the job market every year. We're supposed to have created pre-COVID 12 million jobs a year. We're only doing 3 million jobs a year. We're running a 9 million job deficit annually. Something different needs to be done. And I think as we look at some of this stuff, is to start thinking differently. So you ask about how much should be done through local private capital. I'm a big believer that if we start getting creative with things like blending capital, it is so much better for us if we use and unlock local private capital, sitting in pension funds, in corporates, because it doesn't come with all the other things that Forex comes with, exchange rate risks and those kind of things. And local private investors understand our spaces better. So once again, how does external catalytic capital come and help de-risk and unlock local private capital? That for me is a more sustainable path than trying to bring in all these dollars from the outside. But we know there's probably not enough, but we've got to start somewhere, in my view. So I don't have a concrete or right or wrong answer for you. But what I know is we need to be trying out new things. We need to be experimenting, testing new models, trying to get to proof of concept of some of these things we're trying to do.
Okay. So my last question is, we're always talking about challenges. I mean, this huge gap, you talk about, the average youth of Africa. But in all of this, there's also opportunities. I mean, Africa has a remarkably young workforce, where a lot of countries in Western Europe, for example, or Japan, have just, older and older workforces. And you mentioned the entrepreneurial spirit that you see in Africa. Where there's a capital shortage, there actually are a lot of great ideas knocking around. So I wonder if you could finish off with a kind of a more, your thoughts, crystal ball. How do you see, the African future over maybe the next 10 years? What's going to happen, do you think, in Africa as we get to 2030?
I'm a total Afro-optimist. I'm really proud to be an African and to live on this continent. And the question that I always want to be able to respond to my kids is that, did it matter that I was born and bred in this continent? Did it matter? I came to work in the UK and I spent 3 years there. And typical at that age of 25, I left Kenya saying, I'm never coming back. When I got to England, I thought, but the UK doesn't need me. There's enough Brits to solve Britain's problems. We need people like me coming back to Africa and owning our problems. And so when you think about the opportunities in Africa, they are massive. Okay. You think of what if we got our education right with all the young people that we were getting. What if, imagine the kind of human capital we can unleash onto the world. Capital that, as the UK, Europe is facing an aging population, you can buy into. Markets that would buy European and American goods. Markets that would, talent that would produce African goods for export. Okay? All these things about people crossing the Mediterranean should become a thing of the past the next 5 years. I'm ashamed, to be honest with you, as an African, to see my people cross the continent, the Mediterranean. We failed our people. Okay? The opportunity in Africa is huge. And if you think about even from an impact investing space, there's no better place for you to come and test some of your impact models in Africa. Look at how pay-as-you-go models with solar equipment has happened. People are making money while doing good. Another thing we're trying to challenge is you can still deliver impact at a very cheap and affordable purpose. Africans are not shy to pay for good products and good services. Okay, you look at the pay-as-you-go model in solar. A lot of companies in Africa are making a lot of money while offering really good services, having climate change impact through pay-as-you-go solar models. You think about one of the joys about Africa. In many places, innovation precedes regulation. If you want to come and test some of your real innovation, come to Africa. Look at what Zipline has done in Rwanda, now using drones to transport medicine and blood. Look at M-Pesa. In many places in the West or in the North, M-Pesa would have been stifled by regulation. Okay, and look at the impact that M-Pesa has had on mobile money globally and just the use of the cell phone. Okay, so if you want to innovate, there's no better place than Africa. You'll have good spaces, you'll have exciting challenges you need to try. And they always say, if your innovation can succeed on the extreme users, it will work anywhere. And there's no better place where you can get extreme users than in Africa. You will have talent. There are more Africans going to school today than ever before, graduating from university than ever before. We are having better democracy. Is it perfect? No, but it's much better than it's ever been. Our challenges today are not things for us to be embarrassed about. They're actually the glass is half full. not half empty like it used to be. Okay, so I'm super excited about what we can do in Africa. Why I do what I do is because we can do it differently. We can do it more sustainably, we can do it at scale, and we can do it faster.
Fantastic, inspirational.
A big thank you then to Frank Aswani for being our guest today. And if you want to find out more about our Insight program, which includes these events, a newsletter, articles, and podcasts, there's a link to subscribe in the episode notes. That's it from us today. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back with a new episode very soon. See you then.